We made this.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am Doctor Who, and this is my time and space machine. TARDIS.
Off we go.
It is capable of taking us to any age, on any planet, in any universe.
Rather exciting, isn't it?
Daleks!
You will be exterminated!
They are protected, and they have weapons which can destroy.
What are we going to do?
Exterminate all resistance!
I fight them!
Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Grand, and I'm joined by my co-host, the wonderful Ben. How are you today, Ben?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thank you. Bit hot today, but that's what you get with 27 degrees. So
yeah, we are sweltering a little bit as we record this, but we're gonna battle on to share our thoughts on the world of Doctor Who as we always do. Mm. And yeah, this is actually a bit of a surprise one for us. We weren't originally planning to discuss this, but
We were at some point, but not like now. Yeah. It was a lot later down the line we had planned.
Absolutely, yeah. So yesterday we headed off to the cinema to watch the 4K restoration of the two Doctor Who Peter Cushing movies, Doctor Who and the Daleks and Dalek Invasion Earth 2150. So yeah, so we thought we would head back to 1965 for the second time this year. Obviously, last time we were in 1965, metaphorical, I guess, we were talking about Galaxy 4, our first William Hartnell story. And this time we are talking a kind of alternate Doctors here, aren't we, with Peter Cushing's Doctor.
Indeed, not main chronology, although canonised in-universe as the films. Yeah. 10 and 11 have watched them in the Black Archive during Day of the Doctor.
So let's talk about that. Obviously, we're talking about these movies and then basically how it fits into the Doctor Who world. So these were essentially big screen movies, but essentially really kind of tapping into Dalek mania, weren't they? Because Daleks were absolutely huge in the 60s.
Yeah, this was at the height of it, adapting the Daleks and the Dalek invasion of Earth. And a third one was going to be made for The Chase, but then that never happened. But recently at the BFI screening, the script surfaced where it wasn't going to be Cushing, but they were going to have two Doctors in it. An older one played by Pertwee or Tom Baker, I believe, and then a brand new actor for a younger one.
Well, that's interesting. So, yeah.
I think the big finish, if you're listening. No.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think the plans for the next ones were getting bigger and bonkers. But so The Chase wouldn't really have been modelled much on the Chase we got on TV.
Probably not. But, I mean, there were two Doctors in that, be fair.
Technically, yes, there were, yes.
The robot duplicate. The Death of Doctor Who as Episode 5, which fits with the character's name in these films, I guess.
Yeah, so, I mean, these are kind of loose adaptations, as you said, of the second ever Doctor Who serial, The Daleks, and then The Dalek Invasion of Earth from Season 2.
Yes, originally planned to be the finale to Season 1, I believe, which makes sense with Susan leaving, and then they just went, yeah, we're going to take a break after Reign of Terror.
Yeah. And it opened with Planet of Giants, which is a bit of a low-key opening for the show.
To be fair, that concept was originally going to be what the opening story of the show was.
Yeah.
And shrunk all down, and then you had think a robot thing. Although actually, I think that was later on adapted by Big Finish in the Lost Story, so that's cool.
Right, so before we get off on a completely different path on the First Doctor, we are here to talk about Peter Cushing's Doctor then. So,
yes,
so a little bit about these movies then. So Doctor Who and the Daleks, spelled D-R Who rather than Doctor.
And that's his name as well.
It
Doctor
is.
Doctor Who, although in the second one they call him Doctor and the Doctor.
Yeah. So Doctor Who and the Daleks was directed by Gordon Fleming, who obviously directed the sequel as well. And it was written by Milton Subotsky, based on the script by Terry Nation. Obviously, Terry Nation created the Daleks. It's weird, when you look at the credits for the movies, it looks like it's based on Doctor Who created by Terry Nation. I think actually there was some confusion, you know, because of those movies, that people actually thought Terry Nation had created Doctor Who.
I mean, in a way, he did. Because had he not put the Daleks out there, Doctor Who probably wouldn't have got very far after An Unearthly Child. The Daleks are what made Doctor Who, and Terry Nation made the Daleks.
Well, yeah, quite possibly, definitely, yes.
He then decided to rehash the story every few years, apparently.
Yeah, and we've got things like Planet of the Daleks.
Which is not good. No. Apparently, Genesis, originally, it was just going to be another Daleks rehashing, and they went, no, let's do something different. Show us the origins, and we all know Genesis turned out.
Yeah, one of the all-time greats. So yeah, this was a cinematic Doctor Who, the first ever Doctor Who in colour.
Mmm, indeed.
Yeah, and they decided they wanted a bigger name than William Hartnell, so the...
Well, to be fair, I think Hartnell was probably a big enough name at the time.
Yeah, apparently he was quite disappointed not to be involved in the film.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I have no clue what Hartnell's involvement was. Because at this point, I think we'd probably hit his peak of enjoying being this children's TV character he went from being really confused about to adored, and then around 65 as well, so... It might have been around this time they were starting to try and force him out because of his health. Maybe that's why he wasn't in it.
Maybe. Well, apparently they wanted Peter Cushing because, particularly with his Hammer Horror stuff, he was better known to US and international audiences. So
I can see that, yeah.
So, yeah, you've got Peter Cushing playing Doctor Who, as he's called. I love how he is named. His name is Doctor Who, and then TARDIS is just TARDIS.
I wonder if that's where Stephen Moffat got the idea for in World Enough and Time. Probably parodying these, and also the name of the show, where Missy's like, "My name is Doctor Who."
Yeah.
And then Bill's like, "Wait, is that actually your name?" And Capaldi's like, he's not saying anything.
Well, apparently another tie to the Daleks. Apparently you get those very colourful red Daleks and all Daleks in the Magician's Apprentice and the Witch's Familiar two-parter. And apparently they were quite inspired by the Daleks you see in these movies.
I'm fairly sure as well the Dalek Supreme, seen at the end of Planet of the Daleks, is meant to be from these films, although I couldn't exactly see it properly, so maybe it was a rejected model or something, or remastered, yeah. But...
And also the wonderful red Dalek who likes to count as well. We'll get on.
Yeah.
The counting Dalek.
The counting Dalek. He's like a vampire. He is the Count Dalekula?
Count Dalekula. Yeah, okay. That's what I sort of call him, yeah. So you've got Peter Cushing as Doctor who is he's human in this movie. He is an inventor of a time machine called TARDIS. They never actually say what TARDIS stands for, do they?
No, they do. They do say time and relative dimension in space. Oh, Susan says that.
I watched the film yesterday. I should have remembered that. But
yeah. To be fair as well, we say he's a human inventor here. I think at this point in the show, 1965, it was still a point where the Doctor could well have just been a human from the future. I don't think he gets established as alien until the Troughton years.
Yeah, I think he's actually named as human in the Sensorites. He's implied to be the inventor of the TARDIS in the chase, and he'll soon be identified as Doctor Who in the Charlton era. So it was later on. We don't hear about Gallifrey or anything at this point. So yeah, I think it was very ambiguous in those early years whether he was alien or not. So I guess this just naturally goes where he's a human. He's a human. I thought it was weird, 'cause I just thought that with Susan there was a hint that she was a bit more special, more than just a human girl. So, okay, but then when you're retroactively watching Doctor Who after multiple Doctors, I guess you might read into that with the early black and white stuff. But I guess it wasn't explicitly stated that he was an alien.
Yeah, and I think there's a novel where Ian just calls them humans, even though he kind of knows they're not.
Yeah.
What you're saying about Gallifrey, I don't think that's actually named until the Time Warrior.
Yeah, yes.
And regeneration isn't till Planet of the Spiders. So.
Yeah, so right towards the end of the John Pertwee. It's based on how long it took for him to get that sort of stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, so obviously in this movie, you've got Peter Cushing as Doctor Who. You've got Roberta Tovey as Susan, his granddaughter, who's much younger, and she's a little girl in these two movies.
Yeah. Good thing they didn't try and pair her off with David in the second film.
No, that's probably a good thing they didn't. Jenny Linden as Barbara, who is actually is in this version, she is also the Doctor's granddaughter, Doctor Who's granddaughter.
With her hair.
Oh, the absolutely massive, massive hair. Barbara's hair in this movie is a thing of wonder on its own, I think. And then you've got Roy Castle as Ian, who is Barbara's bumbling boyfriend. He's great, but he's very much played for laughs a lot in this movie as well.
And yet, to be fair, this Ian is probably even more lovable than the one we have on screen. And he's definitely the best part of this film. Like,
he's
adore Ian in this film.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun. And yeah, watching at the cinema, there was a lot of laughs in watching these movies as well. There's lots of things that are a little bit hokey too, and a lot of slapstick, which maybe is a little bit too silly, but I think watching these films in the cinema with other Doctor Who fans is probably the best way to experience it, get to enjoy the atmosphere and, you know, laugh along with everyone else.
And especially kids would have gone to see this, so, you know, a bit of comedy's not too bad.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is Dalek Mania, so this was, you know, Daleks were huge, so making a big screen Doctor Who movie as it was at the time, you know, it should be attracting young audiences. I think when we saw it yesterday, the fans of Jim, there was one kid about 10, and I think you were a 16, were probably the second youngest person in that audience. But
to be fair, at 10 years old, I probably would have gone to see these, so
absolutely. But yeah, but obviously at the time, lots of kids would have watched it. So before we get into the movie, you mentioned about the canon then. So even though this is an alternate doctor, this is a human doctor with his two human granddaughters, Susan and Barbara, and Barbara's boyfriend, Ian. It actually is connected in some way to the Doctor Who universe, the official Doctor Who canon.
In his novelisation of Day of the Doctor, which differs actually quite a bit from the actual TV episode, and is kind of its own story in its own right, and it's a brilliant book. Stephen Moffat, canonises these films. Like, 10 and 11 find them in the Black Archive, made from leaked details of the Doctor's encounter with the Daleks. Probably leaked by UNIT or something. They spend the afternoon while the peace negotiations are going on and Clara's talking to the War Doctor. The two of them, they're just in the Black Archive watching these and then calling each other Doctor Who, and apparently rang up to pitch a third one. And apparently they must have been friends with Peter Cushing, because they say that he appeared in many films after he died, so
yeah,
that feels like something they would do.
Yeah, I always would love that scene to have been filmed as them watching the 60s Doctor Who movies would be quite fun.
I wonder how much of that book's actually cut material and they just wanted to add back in, because it's a treasure trove.
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe in an earlier version of the Daily Doctor script, Moffat actually had them watching Doctor Who and the Daleks.
That people say the 50th didn't encompass all eras of the show, and that is fair. But had those been included, that would have been a real see.
Yeah, we had a really great time as well. Apparently, Peter Cushing was offered the role of the Doctor three times on the TV series as well, and he turned it down. But
which incarnations?
I don't know. I imagine the first potentially as well. But yeah, on three, maybe first, second, third.
I could see him being offered for Pertwee for some reason.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
Tom Baker, I think, around them. I think Bernard Cribbins actually auditioned for the role of the fourth Doctor.
Obviously, he's in the second movie, which we'll talk about as well. But so apparently he regretted. I mean, a lot of actors apparently have said they were offered the role and then have kind of later on said, oh, I would actually regret doing that. So particularly with the modern era as well.
I know Hugh Grant was offered the ninth Doctor, but the only reason he said no was probably regrettable for him now, although he was in Curse of Fatal Death as number 12. But he didn't want to be associated with the show if Series 1 turned out to be a failure and it didn't pick up the show, which... I mean, he couldn't have known at the time, but...
Right, I mean, that's interesting to sort of think what a Hugh Grant Doctor would be like. Because we are one of our episodes, we are looking at the Doctor Dances, Empty Child 2-parter. Maybe we'll, as we do that, we'll say, what does it look like with Hugh Grant as a Doctor?
Because we know what he was like in Curse of Fatal Death.
Well, absolutely, yeah. But anyway, that's a horror thing. That's to come in one of our upcoming podcasts as well. So let's get into the Doctor Who and the Daleks then. What did you think of it as an adaptation of the 1963 serial.
Technically 64 as well.
Yeah, into 64.
I think episodes 1 and 2 were in 63 and then it went 64 or something. I mean, I haven't seen the original story in ages because it's not one I'm very fond of. Quite boring. But by what I remember, this was quite faithful. Like, it even had that middle segment where they've escaped and they're just sort of lounging around in a forest for an episode or two, and it's starting to drag ever so slightly like the serial. And I had a fun game in my head. I was trying to go, by what I remember, right, I think we're at the end of episode 2 by now. I think I got 1, beginning of 2, and end of 6. I think I got a few more in the second film.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously they also do an unearthly child, but there's no side trip to deal with cavemen and fire,
Zar and Carr,
and all those as well. So yeah, they pretty much they get in the TARDIS and they immediately land on Skaro. So they cut all that bump out with the cavemen, which I think
makes sense.
I think it's probably a wise choice.
I mean, I think all other mediums do that. Even the novelization that came out like the next year or something, or it could have been 65. Doctor Who in an Exciting Adventure with the Daleks rehashes an earthly child a bit, like they still meet him in the fog at Totter's Lane, but it's slightly different. And then, yeah, they're off straight to Skaro. We don't need the caveman politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until they become cosmic glowy super beings who fight the 11th Doctor.
You what?
No, yeah, that happens. Doctor Who Magazine's 50th anniversary comic, they decided, you know what, let's not do a multi-Doctor story. Let's bring back Ian and Barbara, and we're going to have the caveman from an earthly child given all god abilities with flaming stones. And it's actually quite good. Apparently, originally, the Aztecs was considered, but so Tlotoxel could have been in it, but they decided to go with the cavemen, which is definitely one way to honour the 50th anniversary.
It is.
11 versus the glowy cavemen boys, and then because they recognise Ian and Barbara.
I mean, your knowledge is astounding, but to be honest, if you came up, oh yeah, in 2014, they did a comic book story where the Doctor landed on this planet where the Zari were fighting the Daleks, and it was all the set of Star Trek with Babylon 5 meets Space Above and Beyond. I was like, yeah, okay, I believe it, because this is crazy. And I
love how half of that has happened in different stories.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we will at some point talk about the assimilation crossover with Next Gen and the Borg with the Cybermen and the 11th Doctor.
Have a bit of the original crew in there with 4 as well, with Spock and Kirk and stuff. That'll be fun.
But that's
a
podcast for another time. But yeah, I think the adaption is really fun. It's a really well paced. Like, they're both like an hour and 20 minutes each, aren't they, these two movies? And I think it still has that kind of weird thing where you think, oh, the story's quite done about halfway through after they escape the Dalek planet. And then they go off and they go to the swamp and to the caves, and lots of stuff happens before they get to the final battle. What do you think of Peter Cushing as the Doctor?
Well, as Doctor Who.
As Doctor Who, yes.
Yeah, he is brilliant. I do really like him. He's got the Hartnell mannerisms. He even sounds like him sometimes, but obviously at this point in the show, it was like really, really early Doctor, so he wasn't the nicest person to be around. But Cushing, he's just really lovely. Like, in the original serial, when the Doctor tells Ian, oh yeah, there was nothing wrong with a fluid link, I just wanted to go to the city, Ian gets very angry, and Ian Cushing's like, yeah, I'm really sorry, I did this, and Ian's like, oh wow.
Yeah. He's very much the kindly grandfather thing. I like his sense of wonder.
He gives me the vibes of had you taken Hartnell from, like, the War Machines or the 10th Planet and transplanted him all the way back to 1963.
Mm, yeah. I mean, he's very, very matter-of-fact. Like, oh, look, here is TARDIS. Let's go on a time trial adventure. It gets to it very, very quickly, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think 4 or 5 minutes in, but that's good. I like how they did that. Like, both films, they have a nice little bit at the start before we get to the main plot.
Yeah. I mean, There's not much kind of angst and depth and any grit, I think, to this Doctor. I think he's very, very much kind of fun service. But I think a lot of the films, you know, there's one fault, they're very kind of glossy.
Well, that is the point, I think, because Doctor Who was very much kid show back then. And, like, these films, there'll be adaptations of the TV serials, but also it'll just be like, look, kids, Daleks in colour. In the cinema.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't need to have depth and nuance to them, like in Genesis or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there is. Yeah, you're not looking for a film with real substance. You're looking for, oh, look, it's fun, Daleks in colour.
And yet, there was one parallel I picked up on which does go into their sort of Nazi nature of the Daleks. Because they don't have the laser beams in these films.
No,
they just fire, like, smoky gas. And, I mean, if you're going the Nazi allegory, gassing people is one way to do it.
Well, yeah, it's weird. There were no lasers in this movie. The Daleks shoot gas in both movies, which kind of kills them as well.
To be fair, in original stories, they don't really fire straight lasers. Their guns just sort of flick in and out, and then there's just light and people fall down.
Well, yeah, apparently the Daleks were going to shoot fire and people were going to more frequently scream. But after the script was sent to the BBFC, concerns were raised by the BBFC that these elements would be too frightening, not suitable for a child-friendly movie certification. So to keep that low rating at the movie, they changed it to basically fire extinguishers to make it all...
Because, yeah, this was a U and I think the second one was PG.
Which kind of makes sense, because the Dalek invasion of Earth is a little bit darker.
Yeah, anyway. And I know on home release, I saw in the recent Doctor Who magazine issue that the VHS release of Invasion of Earth, like the TV one, was also a PG, which does make sense for the type of story. Although the Daleks do then get fired by Dalek's master plan, which is cool.
Apparently the other thing as well, I noticed it when I was watching it, apparently there were lava lamps in the Daleks' headquarters.
Oh yeah, there were. Those are brilliant. And like the food for the Thals, they just look like Lego bricks.
Right, they remind me of Jelly Tots. I think it was in the second movie, wasn't it? But yeah, apparently there were lava lamps. The Daleks like their lava lamps. And apparently they were invented in 1963, and this apparently might be the very first time we've ever seen a lava lamp on the big screen.
What, ever in the world?
Yes.
There we are. Lava lamps were actually invented on Sagala, or did one of them manipulate a Thal to nip into TARDIS and grab a few just to decorate the place?
Oh, I can absolutely. Peter Cushing's doctor would be all over lava lamps.
Oh, yeah, he'd be like, this is very fascinating indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think of Susan, then?
She's actually quite fun in both movies. Like, because the original Susan, obviously, she had a bit more character to her. This one, she's just like a young girl who's just really sarcastic and just...
Yeah, she's got a lot of problems with Roberta Tovey. And so she was 12 when... probably about 11 when this was filmed.
And then after this, she did that music single for Christmas 1965.
Well, there you go then. A bit of trivia there.
I want to spend my Christmas with a Dalek.
Oh, it's that one?
Yep. She did that in 65. I think that's the earliest Doctor Who music there is.
Right, okay. But no, she's good. She's very earnest. She's very... she reminds me of those kind of... I don't know if you how much you've seen, like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and stuff, the kind of live-action Disney movies from the kind of the 50s, 60s and stuff.
Yeah.
She reminds you of that kind of that earnest quality to her. She's not an irritating child character, which she could have been. They definitely... She definitely works in this movie. What do you think of Barbara then?
I think in this movie and the next one, like the Barbara figure, her and Louise, they're both a bit... They're probably the weakest part of the ensemble here.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, I think Jenny Linden, though, her Barbara is much, much stronger than Louise in the second one. Louise is very much dominant in the second one. But... Yeah, she doesn't get masses to do. She obviously... But again, she just kind of goes on with the ride and... there's quite a few scenes with Ian as well, and it's hard to sort of say. She's no Barbara from the TV series by any means, but I think she works in the context of the film, and I've got to say her hair is absolutely massive in this movie. It's bonkers. It's bigger than the Daleks, I think.
Fair. I mean, she does at least. She's the one who works out how to blind the Daleks.
Oh, yeah, that's a wonderful scene, yeah.
I know, just like, how do we blind them? And then she just basically picks up mud.
Well, it's not mud, it's kind of...
it's their slop, chocolatey goo. It's their food.
Chocolate ready brick, I think, is what she uses.
You know what? Fair.
Chocolate ready brick blinds a Dalek, yes. It's, no, great bit there from Barbara.
Oh, yeah, we'll get on to the funny Daleks a bit later.
Oh, yeah, and then Ian. What about, Ian, played by Roy Castle.
Yeah, he is brilliant. He's definitely my favourite character in the film, I think, because he has the clumsiness, but then he does do the action hero later as the comedy, and he's an icon.
Yeah, he is great, and I love how he, the slapstick goes a little bit too far at times, maybe, and they go from the word go. He keeps falling through doors, which happens a lot in this.
Falls onto the petrified lizard thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
On them being punched by Alidon, just sort of like.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, but I love how there'd be some kind of crazy situation, and it's like, we're going to do this. And the look he gives, like, are you serious? Oh, well, let's go for it then. And it's great. The kind of facial delivery from White Castle in this movie is great. He really taps into that comedy and that kind of... But even though a lot of it is slapstick, he plays it so well that it doesn't become too silly. It's more endearing than ridiculous.
Like, he'll just be... They'll say something and he'll be like, yeah, all right then. Sure, why not? Go for it. Yeah. I mean, I'm on an alien planet at an unknown time, so sure.
So we talked about the main cast there, and we've talked about as an adaptation. And what are some of your favourite moments from Doctor Who and the Daleks?
I really like when the Daleks fall through things. Like, they push a food machine onto one, and then they push another one down the lift shaft at the very end, and its eye stalk falls off, which I find lovely. Like, in the second film as well, there's another one where a Dalek falls down and the bits just fall off.
Yeah.
It's amazing. There's also the whole escape from the cell.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun when you've got Ian in the Dalek. Again, which kind of takes it from... the original, the Daleks, seven-parter from 1963 to 1964, but then makes it more fun, makes it more a little bit more comedic. I think again, Fusion Ian is a much more comedic character in this than he ever was in the TV series. So yeah, again, that's a lot of fun. I like when they're kind of cutting through the door and trying to get it for the lift as well. That's quite fun. What other scenes stand out for you?
I mean, a lot of them are the Dalek ones, because I think they're the most fun part of it. But there's Ian with the door that just won't open.
Yes, that's quite fun. Talking of Daleks, I love that they all the Daleks talk like this all the time. I don't have an impression there. But they all get... There's a lot of dialogue for Daleks, but they all do it, apart from that one moment when like the black Dalek has been talking for so long, he just speeds up.
Yeah, he says... And then immediately it goes and talks like this.
Yes.
Like, he's like, which one of you will come to the city really slowly? Which one will it be?
Yeah, he's like, all right, enough now. Just get on with it. It's great. I love it. And of course, the red Dalek.
The Countdown Dalek.
The Countdown Dalek.
Count Dalekula?
That's the one, yeah. I love he starts counting down from, 98, 97, 96. And then halfway through, you cut back and you're hearing they're talking in the background, 27... 26,
yeah,
25.
Like, in the cinema screen, it was just like 100. And then as soon as it went 99, they were just laughs. They're like, oh, it's actually doing it.
It was. And then, I think when you cut back and you hear the background, 27, and the audience were laughing. It was so good. It was because it is ridiculously fun. For me, one of my favourite moments of the film. We just had this counting Dalek.
There was another brilliant bit where they're like, oh no, the Dalek's not facing us. We can't blind it. Dalek. Yes. And then they just smudge the Eddie Breck on it and then throw the cape. And then like, right, Ian, get in.
Yes.
Get in the Dalek. And then he's like, ooh, there's loads of switches. Can I press anything?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's great. I love the banter. And as we said, Cushing's Doctor is... He's not that kind of grumpy old man. He's much more of a kindly grandfather. So even though he can be a bit... stirred with Ian, who's a bit more of a kind of slapstick character, he's generally like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. This is a great time. And actually you get a sense that, he's taking it seriously, but he's really enjoying the sense of wonder of going to this alien world.
Man, I love how Ian's the one who just saves the day as well. Like, oh no, we've got 4 minutes to the bomb. Hey, Daleks. And they just shoot the
thing.
Oh, and then he just looks up, sees the number 3. That's my lucky number.
Absolutely, yeah. Again, that overlays some good laughs at cinema as well.
I think the bit that got the most laugh, though, was when Alidon's breaking off the branch, he just goes, we fight! And it zooms right in on his face.
Yes.
And that had the most laugh, I think.
And that was.
I also want to raise the background when they're climbing the mountains, before they're inside, when they're outside, and you see the sort of rocky mountain landscape.
Well, that looked lovely. I really like that.
I swear, that is possibly the cover to the 1964 annual, that landscape. I seem to remember Hartnell and then some Zabi and some Monoptera and maybe a Dalek or two on that annual cover, and it's that background.
Yeah, that certainly rings a bell. It's a goal. They did a lot. They didn't like old Star Trek in the 60s as well. These kind of beautiful coloured matte backgrounds are used in kind of like sci-fi shows. And it does look absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it really, because you can tell, it's an older film, it's the 60s, you can tell that, but it still looks really nice.
It does look really good.
The Thal design as well. That's...
Oh yeah, with their bright wigs and the makeup and that. Yeah,
when I first saw Thal, I was like, oh okay, that's what they're going for.
Yeah, this is a Thal's in colour. Yes, absolutely. Because all I love the sense of colour in this movie. Yeah. You've obviously got you've got Barbara in a kind of pink trousers, and you've got the bright red Dalek and the blue and yellow Daleks as well.
Yeah, and the dark green forest, that was really nice.
Yeah,
it's like this is Alidon, but he's a hippie.
Absolutely, yeah. The one thing I love about the Thals as well is when they go off to. And I don't quite know what. And I try to remember from the Dalek Seal if this had the same issue where they essentially go. They do this big long treacherous journey to sneak into the city from the back, and they just go for the front anyway. But when they go to the water, Ian sees the thing in the water, and they go right. Okay, off you go. I'm going to stick here in front of these water bottles, but I'll join you ahead just after Ian's seen this monster. And what happens? He dies.
Yeah, I mean, I remember there being the Lake of Mutations in the original serial in around episode 5 or 6, so I think they do go to a swampy place.
Yeah, it's very much the structure of the Daleks, but it's just the ridiculousness of the idea that Ian sees a monster and they go, okay, and then immediately one of the Thal brothers goes, I'm now going to stay behind here and I'm going to fill the water pools in the murky swamp where Ian just saw the monster, but don't worry, I'll catch you guys up.
Yeah. And the Thal like cuts himself off the rope, but then he's just clinging onto the rocks.
Yeah, that did elicit some laughs as well. The other brother as well. Yeah, the two brothers. I mean,
like he seemed really suicidal, and then no.
Yeah, well. it's a bit weird, but again, a little bit camp as well. But I think again that suited the aesthetic tone of the movie. Yeah. Any other thoughts on Doctor and the Daleks then before we move on to the other movie?
I mean, the ending is great. You can tell it's overlay of Roman's marching, but then Ian's like, oh no. And like you get the sense that and then you've got the crew off on more adventures.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although the Romans, that wasn't until the Romans.
Once you've got to the end of Doc 2 and the Daleks, yeah, it immediately suggests this is going to follow the same format as a TV show and do more adventures. So obviously the Romans at the end it's fun and silly, but it kind of absolutely works. Okay, shall we move on then to Dalek Invasion Earth 21 AD?
2150 AD.
2150.
It's right in front of you.
It is on front of me. I can't.
Yeah, I'm shaming him on this podcast right now, live.
I can't read the screen. Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Which is an adaptation of the Dalek Invasion of Earth from the second series. It's the story where Susan originally left. This one again is directed by Gordon Fleming and written by Milton Subotsky, and we've obviously credited Terry Nation again.
See, I'm trying to think, did Nation actually write Invasion of Earth, or was that David Whittaker? I wanted to say it was Whittaker who actually wrote Invasion of Earth, but I mean Terry Nation did create the Daleks, so.
Well, he did create the Daleks, yeah. Look at the story on this, going back to it now to remind myself.
But David Whittaker probably wrote the best Dalek stories of the 60s.
So, no, you know, it was Terry Nation who wrote that one, yeah. No, so Terry Nation wrote both of the stories. So, yeah, so Terry Nation's stories are both what are used for the adaptation of the movies as well. Then. So, yeah, Dalek Invasion Earth 2150 AD, I got that right. Again, they say, as you said, you've got Gordon Fleming and Milton Subotsky back as director and writer. Again, you've got Peter Cushing as Doctor Who and Roberta Tovey as Susan, but they replaced Ian and Barbara in this movie, I believe.
I believe Barbara just wasn't there because the actress didn't want to come back, which I'm not entirely sure why, but fair.
Yeah.
And then you get Wilf, but he's not Wilf, but he's also... Bernard Cribbins.
Yeah, so
he's
Bernard
early.
Cribbins, yes.
He's early.
He is. It's a great role for him. So, yeah, apparently, Peter Cushing only agreed to do the film if Roberta Tovey returned as his granddaughter. So, that was good. So, yeah, it's a bit of a adaptation of the second one, but I think whereas the first one is probably a little bit more faithful to the original story, this one does a few things a little differently. Obviously, Susan's subplot is completely different because she's a young girl in this movie. What I assumed was actually if she was going to fall in love with David, it was going to probably be Louise's character that does this, but obviously that plays out differently as well. So obviously, yeah, so you've got... So Ray Brooks is playing David in this movie, yeah, and you've got Jill Curzon as Louise, who is the Doctor Who's niece in this movie, yeah. So she's very much the Barbara character without being the Barbara character. And I think, as we said, she's probably... a bit more annoying to see this movie. I didn't really... She was fine in the role, but I didn't really get much from her. I think there was more with Barbara in the last one than there was with Louise in this one, certainly. And, of course, you've got Bernard Cribbins in his first Doctor Who role here, playing Tom Campbell, the police sergeant who... obviously, we open the movie where he's trying to arrest some robbers and then wanders into the TARDIS.
Yeah, there's just a brilliant bit where he just sort of staggers in after being hit by the head and then it just zooms in on them all turning to face him, especially Cushing. He's just like, just zooms in on his face. Yes. And he just turns around like, who are you?
Yeah, so it's a very fun opening, I think. You get this kind of police robbery happening. He's chasing after them. He goes to the police box thinking, oh, I'll call for help. And yeah, just wanders into the TARDIS, which has appeared on the London streets. And there's a doctor, Louise, and Susan just doing their experiments.
Just before they're about to leave for London, 2150 AD.
Yeah.
So but there's a brilliant bit before the credits where, like, there's a guy who's running over to the police box, is turning to talk to someone, turns back and the TARDIS is gone and he just falls onto the floor and then just turns and looks at the camera and shrugs like, eh, well, it's bound to happen one day.
Yeah, that got some laughs too. So yeah, it's got a little bit of some of the slapstick like that from the first movie, but it's probably a little bit less because the story's a little bit more serious this time. So yeah, as I said, this movie came out in 1966, a year later, and follows the Doctor Who and the TARDIS crew essentially in this one heading off to 2150 AD where London is under attack from a Dalek invasion force. So what do you think of this one as an adaptation of that second Dalek story?
Yeah, I think it does work pretty well, like especially like the episode one segment up until the Dalek coming out of the Thames. That's practically all the same, and I seem to remember them evacuating the Doctor and Ian in the Roboman ship, and then what they didn't do, which the serial did, was because Hartnell was doing one of his holidays. He wasn't in episode four.
Right.
But in this, they were just like, well, probably to keep pace as well. Cushing was in the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So there's a lot of a Doctor in this one, certainly. What do you think of the Daleks and the Robomen in this story?
Yeah, I thought they were pretty good. Like, the Robomen, they can't really have much emotion because they're Robomen.
Yes.
But they work pretty well. There was that scene where, like, Tom's trying to blend in with them and keeps getting the timing cues.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest moment of slapstick they had in this movie when he's undercover as a robot on a Dalek ship. And, yeah, it's and they get fed jelly tots from the Dalek dispenser.
Yeah, jelly beans. And then later Louise, like, accidentally turns it on and it's all there. Yeah. It's like, no, push it back, push it back.
Yeah, so I guess there's probably three plots running through this story then. So you've got the Doctor and Tom who go off to find a way of kind of opening the TARDIS if it's been trapped in the rubble. You've got Susan and Louise who basically get discovered by the underground movement.
Yeah, with Dortmund and David and...
And Riley, yeah. So yeah, they end up there. And then obviously, you end up with kind of Susan's adventure going across England while Louise is trapped on the Dalek ship with Tom. And the Doctor is off.
With David and they're off. Trying to get to the mines.
So yeah, it kind of pretty much follows the same plot as that second story on the most part. Builds towards that brilliant attack on the Dalek source. So what did you think of the whole attack?
Oh yeah, that was brilliant. Like just pushing the Dalek down the ramp and it explodes and Roboman, like, I'm fairly sure there is a guy who actually yells "Yeehaw" and then jumps onto a Dalek.
There was, yeah, that was very funny. Yeah,
it's like, yep, okay, there's a rope. Well, first this guy's a rope man who thinks of himself as a cowboy.
Yeah, I love the use of soft jazz in this movie. There's a lot of, like, Dalek jazz. When fighting breaks out, you get that kind of dun-dun-dun music, and then it breaks into jazz. And it's like, happens a lot in this movie. It's weird, because I really like the music from the first one. I think I prefer the first one, because the slapstick probably works better in that one as well.
I think I prefer this one, but I think that's more to do with my preference on the TV series as well.
Oh, I agree. The Dalek Invasion of Earth as a story is probably stronger than the Daleks, but I think with these movies, it's probably the other way round. But there's a really good start. I think this is probably one where the story gets a bit more serious, so when you have the sillier moments, they do jar a little bit more, but it's still generally quite light-hearted as a movie, even though you've got all the people dying. There's a lot more deaths in this movie, so I think, again, the Daleks are still using their kind of their gas guns, I guess, as you call them. But that Dalek attack on the Dalek sorcerer is pretty much a massacre, isn't it?
Yeah, like, the guy Susan goes off with, he's, like, the last one or the only one to really return other than David.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they are them writing the little message on the door.
Yes.
And then Doctor Who does not see it, and he's like, this is most unusual.
Yeah, so what are some of your favourite moments from the second movie, then?
I think the attack on the Dalek saucer is definitely one of them. The bits, like, with Tom on the saucer, that's fun as well. And then, like, the big ending segment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a really, really fun kind of final climax there at the mine as well. I think you were saying about Tom, actually. I think, because he's obviously the Ian character for the story's replacement for Ian. And interesting, in both movies, it's the Ian character that tends to kind of really shine, I think. As really good as Peter Cushing is, I think Peter Cushing is great in these movies. Well, and Toby's good as Susan. I think it's the Ian and then the Ian replacement in Tom that really kind of stand out. I think Bernard Cribbins is fantastic.
Well, he's Bernard Cribbins, of course he is.
Yes.
But yeah, because he's just as good as Wilf. Well, probably better with Wilf. But yeah, like, even the TV show at this point, Ian was like the main action hero one still.
Yeah.
So they let him keep that role.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's probably why Louise kind of gets... Again, she was fine in this movie, but I didn't really get a lot from her. I thought Jill Curzon is fine in the role. There's nothing bad about her performance as Louise, but she's very much, there's obviously a replacement for Barbara, but without any real kind of identity of her own, which is a shame. But yeah, there are some really, really good moments there. I think the attack on it is great. You know, Rick breaks into jazz is quite funny. What is the whole stuff with the Daleks in the streets when they're kind of running away? Did that kind of feel as epic as it could have been? The whole with the Daleks and the Roadmen patrolling the streets of desolated London.
I mean, maybe not, but even in the original TV serial, it wasn't really either. I remember as Barbara and I think Jenny, like, wheeling Dortmund along the street while the Daleks are there. Dortmund being killed about halfway through, I think that's, like, the original story.
Yeah, Dortmund's last stand against the Daleks with all the when he's throwing the weapons. That was quite good. And I thought Godfrey Quigley was good as that character as well. Anything else in kind of the London stuff that kind of stuck out to you?
Not particularly, because then we got their trek across the countryside, and it's like, right, we'll meet him in Watford. We have to bypass Watford.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, and there's the two women who are like...
Yeah, that's probably one of the darkest moments of the movie, when Susan arrives with the two women who seem to suggest that they're kind of providing essentially clothing to the people working the mines. I've kind of got this deal with the Daleks, and they get betrayed. Which is quite dark. And I think that's definitely a moment from the TV, and it's quite dark. You know, they're almost collaborators with the Daleks.
Mm, same with that the guy in the greyish coat.
Oh, yes,
that the Doctor meets.
Yeah, played by Philip Maddock, who will obviously return in Doctor as well with
multiple roles actually.
Yeah,
Brain
Morbius is one of the prominent ones.
That's the most notable one I can think of, and then gets killed in the hut. Like,
well, yeah, his character Broccoli is a real piece of work as well.
Hey, see, look, I told you the Doctor would be here. Yeah. Oh, you're about to kill me. I better get inside. And then they just blow it up anyway.
Yeah. But yeah, I think... and maybe that's why the second one didn't resonate as much for me, because, you know, it does play into those darker moments, the idea of collaboration with the Daleks, and actually how... You see it a lot in kind of post-apocalyptic dramas where, you know, as much as it's about the fight for survival, it's also about... It allows those people who are more ruthless... or psychopathic, or just generally, you know, aren't particularly nice people, they tend to take advantage of what's going on. And you see that in the betrayal of Susan, you see that in Philip Maddock's character as well, when he betrays the Doctor. Obviously, it plays into the Doctor's plan, but you've kind of got these kind of darker elements, which, again, don't always gel as much with the comedic stuff. And I think particularly when you get to the second half, there is less slapstick, I think, than there was in the stuff. It almost like it starts off on the same vein with some of the slapstick of the first movie, and then gets a little bit darker as it progresses as well. The one thing I go back to London before we kind of go finish stuff talking about the stuff in the mines as well is I was almost again, I know it's the '60s, but I kind of found it disappointing that this is supposed to be 2150 AD. I get in the TV series it was limited budget, but you know, if you look at the cars and the way people are dressed, and even like the posters on the wall, it's like this is all like there's no illusion. This is anything other than the 1960s.
Mm. Oh, there's that bit at the beginning where they find a Robot Man, and the Doctor just goes, "A radio."
Yes,
and just opens it up.
Yes, yeah, that bit as well, definitely. That like had some laughs. But yeah, generally aesthetically, London, there's no real attempt to dress up London that it looks futuristic.
I mean, I guess you could argue, because I think the invasion canonically goes on for about 10-ish years or so, you could argue that society's just been forced back a bit.
But it's what you see. You see the ruined cars. The cars that you see that have basically been... Have been left there in the rubble. There's like posters like soup on the walls and stuff.
Oh, sugar puffs, I saw.
And sugar puffs. Shit, that really stood out to me. Because it kind of... Again, there was stuff like... There was that posters on the waterfront in the original TV series, which is not in this one. That kind of darker...
Oh, poster. Do not dump bodies in the river.
Yeah,
story opens with the Roboman just throwing himself in there.
Yeah, so they do sanitize a few of the dark elements of the TV show, certainly, but that poster's missing as well, which I can understand for kind of bigger audience, you know, a lot of kids watching this movie as well. But I don't think there's enough done, given that I'm not saying this movie would have had a massive budget, but it is a bigger kind of colour version of Doctor Who, but there's no real attempt to just to make it a little bit look aesthetically like it's a futuristic London that's been destroyed. It's basically London from the 1960s.
Yeah, no, I get what you mean.
Yeah. So let's talk about those scenes. And so we've talked about the attack on the Dalek saucer. We've talked about Tom infiltrating, pretending to be a Roboman, which is quite funny as well. We've talked about Dortmund's kind of final last stand. What other scenes stand out for you in this movie?
The big ending bit, I think. Both where he's distracting the Daleks while Tom's climbing the shaft.
Yeah, that's great. I think, again, Tom's in the action here, they're climbing into the shaft, kind of diverting the bomb is great.
I guess that's where you get the big Dalek action sequences, like getting the Robo-Men to attack the Daleks.
Yeah. I was disappointed that the red Dalek in this one doesn't count down, though.
Yeah, because there is a countdown.
Yes, there's a countdown again.
There's one bit where Tom escaping at the end and then Dalek menacing him, but the people just throw a green sheet over it.
Yes, that was very funny, yeah. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on with the kind of double-crossing going on and kind of infiltrating a Manox character is a particularly nasty piece of work. But, it's quite a big action-packed finale, I guess, with the turn the Robo-Men onto the Daleks and that kind of big fight as well. I've got to say, though, that the way that Dalek saucer crashed into the mine, that should have caused a lot more damage than it seemed to do, you know. People were quite close to that crash site.
Yeah, I know, and they're all ducking down. But you have the Daleks, like, with the magnetic pool pulling them in. And
yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, one of them's a gif, I think, of the Dalek falling into it.
Yeah.
And then there's another one where it's like falls and then the sucker and the gun just break off as it falls down.
Yeah, definitely. That was a lot of fun. I think when you got the Daleks being destroyed by the magnetic pool, that was definitely a lot of fun. Yeah, any other kind of thoughts now? I mean, I guess we probably haven't spoken as much about this movie as the first one because it's kind of more of an adaptation of it's a bit darker, not a slapstick. We've talked about the kind of the key moments there. Yes. Obviously there is no Susan romance because she was a girl in this movie. And they decided not to do the Louise, which is basically the Barb replacement.
To be fair, we didn't see enough really of David or Louise.
No, David was fine. He's probably not as prominent as he might have been in the TV serial, probably because one thing they take out of this is Susan falling in love with David and decided to stay behind. So there's no big kind of emotional farewell. So I guess that's for me. Is I think if I'm comparing these adaptations to the original TV series, I think Doctor and the Daleks is fairly faithful. It's big, it's bold, it's colourful. It's a much more kind of slapstick but kind of fun and energetic adaptation of that first story. I know that either of these films are as good as those TV versions, personally. What do you think?
That's fair. I don't remember the Daleks well enough.
Yeah. But these movies are a lot of fun.
They are.
But I think with the second one, I think there's a lot of that emotional resonance that, you know, with Susan's farewell and the Doctor's final speech and some of those darker elements have been sanitised from it. I mean, it just doesn't quite work as strongly as the TV series where it's based.
What I do like, the ending to this one, where it's like, they send Tom back a bit so we can capture them.
Yeah.
And then he has that Wilf laugh.
He
does is Wilf.
When he captures the robbers, yes.
Yeah, and he just has it. I'm like, oh, yes, it's a Wilf laugh. He had it even back then. He's like, and then almost like Cushing waving goodbye at the end. He's like, you'll never see me again, bye.
Yeah. What is it? The thing about Tom, he just kind of stumbles upon the TARDIS, and they just kidnap him, as they do in True Doctor Who Fashion.
Yeah, this is where the kidnap happens.
Yeah.
There's no time. He'll have to come with us. They could have just waited. Like, it's a time machine.
Exactly. There's no reason they died the kingdom apart from the fact, let's get Tom in because we need another male character on the film.
Yeah, why not do he stumbles in as it's taking off?
Yes. Yeah, no, they decide just to take him away. But anyway, it works because it's great to have him on there. Yeah, Philip Madoc as well. Looking at some of the trivia on this movie, like Philip Madoc, who plays Broccoli, he's a real, really smarmy standout character, I think, as well. He played four characters in The Crotons, The War Games, Brain of Morbius, and The Power of Kroll.
Oh, yeah, he's either the War Chief in War Games, because the Warlord's the one, the Time Lords dematerialise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's the War Chief, like the villain for the first half of it or so.
Yeah, definitely. Apparently, early drafts of the script featured a purple Dalek before it was replaced by a black Dalek, so we nearly had a purple Dalek.
Well, to be fair, the black Dalek is part of the TV serial.
Yes, yes.
There's one bit in the TV serial which they never replicated here, which was slightly upsetting, because in the TV serial there's a bit where, like, the Doctor and co are in the ship, I think, towards the end, and the Daleks are trundling by down the corridor, and they're hidden behind the wall, and one Dalek visibly turns and looks at the Doctor, then just turns away and keeps going. Like, it's like, oh no, the Doctor. Oh, but if I don't say anything, I can clock out early. Okay, see you, Doctor. Yeah. And they don't replicate that here, which is slightly upsetting.
But no, it's good. It's fun, it's good. I don't think it really does enough to distinguish itself as 2150 rather than 1960s London. But I think it is a lot of fun. And I think, yeah, the whole kind of final sequence is great. The attack on the Dalek ship is great. And, yeah, Bernard Cribbins is a treasure. He's
back.
He's back. And he will be back as well. He's back in the 60s as well. So Bernard Cribbins continues to be part of the Doctor Who legacy. But, yeah, it's a fun second movie. But I don't think for me kind of was as strong as Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Yeah, I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, which one is your favourite of the two?
It's hard to say, honestly, because I think I do quite like them both. I think Doctor Who and the Daleks wins when they're in the city, but like it does have the middle bit where it drags out, and I think this one's a bit better than that.
Yeah, so. I agree with that. Yeah, the pacing is probably better on the second one.
Yeah,
the first
but
one.
I mean, the pacing of Invasion of Earth was better, except Hartnell was asleep for an episode.
Yeah.
They never had the Slither in this either.
The Slither, what's that?
It's sort of like black gooey pet thing from Invasion of Earth.
Oh yeah, yeah. There are definitely things missing from this story, I guess, to kind of sanitize it and keep it fast.
It would be fun if we had more movie adaptations of Doctor Who stories. They should have done Cushing on the Web Planet.
Wow, that'd be what? Yeah, what? Okay, let's think about this then before we wrap up. Then, what Doctor Who stories? If we moved away from the Daleks, because I know Chase was one they were talking about. If they'd done other Doctor Who stories with Peter Cushing's Doctor, what would you have liked to have seen?
I mean, in terms of Hartnell-y stuff, they probably could have done a pure historical, but would that have sustained the length?
I'm not sure historicals would have worked for this. Because
I think the Web Planet is a good contender just for how weird it is.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would have worked. I think Galaxy 4 actually, it came out this time. We talked about we talked about Galaxy 4 and the animated restoration a few months ago.
And if we sort of went into Troughton era a bit as well.
Oh, there's plenty there.
Something like The Invasion.
Yeah, or Tomb of Cybermen.
Yeah, Web of Fear.
Ice Warriors. There's loads I think they could do on the second Doctor. I think that second, almost the sense of adventure that you get with the second Doctor is very much apparent here in the Peter Cushing movie. So I agree. I think there could be lots more. But yeah, from William Hartnell, I think, Web Planet, even though it's not a great story, I could see that Web Planet being a Cushing story. I could see Galaxy 4 being a Cushing story. Obviously, I can see The Chase for that same reason.
Could have done 10th Planet. That would be interesting. But at the end, he doesn't regenerate. He just dies. Cushing just dies of old age at the end after fighting the Cybermen. That's it. It's the end.
Yeah.
The final end.
Yeah. But yeah, we said probably not a Stark. I think Starkles would have worked as well. Planet of the Giants as well. Planet of the Giants would have worked.
Yeah, probably good though. Could have done something like the Sensorites, I guess.
Yeah, Sensorites. Yeah, there's the
Keys of Marinus.
Yes, that would have worked, definitely. Cool. So yeah, there's a few other stories they could. I think there was a Termination one as well, so maybe they.
Yeah, it was actually. I think Mariner's Landroid Invasion are the only two he wrote which weren't Daleks.
Yeah. Cool. So I think we've probably milked this all it's worth. Any kind of final thoughts on Peter Cushing's Doctor and these movies in general?
I mean, they're just fun. Like, they're just niche byproducts of the 60s and Dalek mania. And yeah, but Cushing definitely is a really fun presence to be with.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of like, when I was watching, I was thinking, yeah, that they're kind of the curiosities. They're kind of dot to what if they are. They, you know, they got the coin. They're kind of a kind of modern term done with Marvel. But yeah, it's an alternate reality Doctor, essentially, isn't it? You know, the Unbound series before Unbound was a thing, and yeah, I don't feel like I wanted more from this. You know, it was a fun few hours to kind of sit there at the cinema and watch both movies. I hadn't seen these since I was a kid, so for me it's a long time. So yeah, it was great to be visiting on the big screen, see with the audience as well, and kind of enjoy and laugh along with the audience. But I think they are just fun, and obviously you can see that they were targeted for the Heart Dalek Mania. I wouldn't need to see more again, but I would like to see more of Peter Cushing's Doctor. I wonder what Peter Cushing's Doctor would have been like had he taken up the offer of being Doctor on the TV series, and how that might have played out.
Or even put him like in a second Doctor scenario and give him a Jamie or
someone.
That could have been.
Oh, I say I kind of maybe it's a bit too close to Hartnell because it is obviously modern on Hartnell to an extent. Yeah. They give them stories they're adapting. But
I would have liked to see what he could have done as Pertwee.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I kind of, you know, as much as I adore Pertwee, and I'm really glad we had him as a third Doctor.
Give him Inferno, but then you have Roberta Tovey as like this little genocidal fascist Susan. With her eye patch, and she just trained the gun on him.
I think evil alternate Susan would have been absolutely evil. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fine. I think if anything, as much as I say, I thought Roy Castle and Bernard Cribbins were probably the highlights generally to the stars of the two movies. Peter Cushing is very much the star himself, and I really enjoyed seeing his Doctor on screen, and that's kind of what I take away from it.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that comes to the end of our discussion on Doctor and the Daleks and Dalek Invasion Earth 2150 AD. So thanks for joining us for our episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS crew and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'd really love to hear your thoughts. If you want to find out more from the TARDIS crew, you can find us on Twitter at CrewTARDIS and Instagram at the TARDIS crew. Doctor is not what we're discussing, so I'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. Coming up, we'll be talking the Ninth Doctor story. We'll get around to it with the Every Child Doctor Dances and chatting Doctor influences with Big Finish writer Rob Valentine. So join us again for the TARDIS crew, because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea's getting cold.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Make It So, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
Why? Why do you even need to bring that up? Mm. You don't. We've done a story, and you're just using that for the. God. No, it's like, no. I don't get it. I understand it. I understand Soongs are always going to be in some way related to the Kang story because of genetics and the stuff like that they've done. I get it, but. To do that, and if it comes in season 3, if it's a main thing in season 3, then I'll hold judgment. If it doesn't get mentioned in season 3, then what was the point?
Pick a disc.
Guardian reading lefty, which
a bleeding heart is one of the phrases we use a lot here in the US. Like, he cares about the homeless.
Yeah.
I'm sort of shifting into my Limbo impersonation. Oh, he wants to house the homeless. What is he, a communist? Like, you know, that's not... maybe a little. but he's concerned with this. He's concerned with climate change. He's concerned with poverty. He's concerned with just general treatment of your fellow human beings. Like, I'm sure he resents having been subjected to trauma in his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives him a great deal of sympathy, which I think is a good quality.
Third one, are the following names of hops, US space shuttles, or both?
Brilliant.
First one, Atlantis.
No, it's a US space shuttle. But is it a hop? I'm going to say it's just a US space shuttle.
Correct.
Good.
I didn't.
Have I got to get best of three again?
Yes. Yeah, I didn't know that was a space shuttle. That's my poor knowledge, that is. second one, Galaxy.
I know that that's a hop because I've seen it in a pub recently. I don't know if it's a space shuttle, so I'm going to say both.
Just a hop, that one.
Oh, damn it.
Next one, Endeavour.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.